Well, hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 17 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Now, 17, considered a strong spiritual number and seen as special. People under the influence of 17 exude leadership skills and a great sense of judgment, two qualities I would never reference to my two baseball brothers who join me for the Johnny and Josh Show, the legend that is Eric the producer, and for the very first time making his debut performance, my fellow podcast brother, Mr. James Holden. Boys, welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, it's good to be back. Although I wasn't expecting James to be the party crasher here. Whereas, you know, with Josh and David's not here, I've been away on Wimbledon duty for the BBC, and now I come back to the show and Josh and Dave decide to go on holiday.
But no sooner are you back, Eric, you're disappearing again. You're off to the Olympics.
That's correct. Well, I'm not. I was last year. I was booked to go to Tokyo, beautiful Tokyo, for the 2020 Olympics. And this year, I'll still be working the Olympics, but from BBC Manchester in Salford.
Oh, really? All right.
Okay. Great. Tokyo, Manchester. Yeah, quite. Yeah, never mind.
Jimbo, I see you've got
very nice at this time of year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lovely to have you on the show, James. Thank you for coming in, buddy. We're very, very grateful to you.
Thanks, mate. This feels like a big honor. I feel I've been promoted from, you know, midweek up to the, you know, kind of triple A to the full MLB team, isn't it, with you and Eric?
Big moment. If you're calling behind home plate triple A, I'm well happy. Well happy. I think that's a far higher standard than I thought we'd achieve. But number in the Bible, by the way, where the biblical references are proving very popular on the show.
I didn't miss this bit.
You didn't miss this bit. Number 17 symbolizes overcoming the enemy and complete victory. And I hope that's relevant to the Canadian Olympic team. What is interesting, guys, as I was doing my research on number 17, most people in the world consider number 13 as the most unlucky number. Yeah. And yet in Italy, the number 17 is considered the most unlucky. It goes back to the age of Romans. It's really bizarre. The Roman numerals for 17, you, of course, both know, being classically educated individuals, XB11, which when rearranged becomes Vixi. In Latin, that means I have lived, which essentially means I am dead. As a result, the next time you're on Air Italia, you'll probably find there's no row 17 for that very reason. Some hotels in Italy don't have a room 17. Now you know. It's a learning process.
I was not aware of that.
Absolutely. There you go. Now, notable 17s, boys.
Before we go into the notable 17s,
yes.
Can I just say that last season, our first season of the Johnny and Josh Show, the shortened season, we only did 16 episodes, 16 weeks of baseball. We've now surpassed the amount of episodes from last year.
So we're in uncharted territory.
We are. This is scary.
I think someone needs to tell Josh and David. That may explain why they're not here. They missed the memo about the longer season.
This is going on. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But come on, I want to know. Retired number 17s, there's only two.
Well, I'm sure there's more, but I'm thinking.
No, there isn't. There's only two. There's only
Dizzy Dean?
Yep. For the Cards, 1974. And?
Daffy Dean.
Nope. Todd Helton.
Retired. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you. I was going to have to cheat and look that one up. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
But either iconic MLB players that have played with the number 17 include Mark Grace, Lance Berkman, very fond of Lance Berkman, the Astros, Felipe Alou. So there's been a few. Felipe, I should say.
Former Expos manager. Thank you very much.
But I'm going to make a prediction here, boys. Here's another potential retiree from number 17 by the Angels in a number of years' time. Any thoughts?
Some obscure guy.
Does he throw as well as hit?
He might do, Jimbo. Absolutely. Well done. Shohei Ohtani. How about that? So here's a bit of a trivia question. This isn't the trivia because you're about to do it, Eric. What is the most retired number in Major League Baseball history?
It'll be a single digit one, won't it?
It's not.
Really?
It's not. No. It's not.
I should know this.
It's number 20.
Interesting.
There are 11 retirees of the number 20. Part of the reason being is that Frank Robinson had his number 20 retired not once, not twice, three times by the Orioles, the Reds, and Cleveland.
Cleveland Indians, that's a good point. And Mark Fitteridge. You should save that nugget for episode 20. You came out of the gates too early.
Hey, mate, that's three away. No one will have remembered. I certainly won't, so we'll just go there again. Okay, COVID update. 7 positive tests in the Yankee camp at last count. Not all necessarily players, but clearly a major outbreak. So as with the rest of the Royal boys, the bad news, COVID is rearing its ugly head and impacting on MLB. What about the Canadian border? What's the story there, Eric?
Well, you know, my mantra for the entire season was the Canadian border is still closed. But guess what?
It's open.
Canadian border is open. Kind of.
Why?
The Canadian government have given a special dispensation for the Toronto Blue Jays to come back to the Rogers Centre and play their home games back in the city of Toronto.
Starting when?
Starting July 30th for a 10-game homestand, which will start with the Kansas City Royals. And it'll be one hell of a home game because the last time there was any Major League Baseball or Blue Jays game in Canada, that was September 29th, 2019. And I think I mentioned this before. Kim Ryu-jin, he signed for the Toronto Blue Jays in December 2019. He's been playing for over a season and a half. He's never set foot in the city of Toronto, let alone Canada.
So oh, my God. What a great
stat. Will be his first time while he'll be playing a home game actually at home. And the reason being now here's an interesting thing. You know, yes, there was a slow vaccine rollout in Canada, but now the rollout has actually surpassed United States. There's more of a percentage of the population in Canada has been vaccinated compared to the United States now. So at the moment, the Canadian border is kind of still closed for crossing in and out of Canada for American and Canadian tourists, but the Blue Jays are allowed to fly.
Love it. Well, another great stat is that the Johnny and Josh Show Twitter followers is up another 16 this week. We're up to 2,092. Keep them going, team. Subscribe, like, hit plinkety-plonk at the bottom of the screen if you're watching us on YouTube, and get involved. Now, Eric, you're going to set us up with this week's trivia question, my friend.
Well, since we've just, you know, the All-Star game is now gone by, and we are now in the second half of the season, and now the next thing we have to look forward to is a World Series as a big Major League Baseball event. But my question to you, gentlemen, is who is the only player to have been the All-Star Game MVP and a World Series MVP in the same year?
Oh, good question.
So if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. manages to win the World Series this year, he'll be the second.
Okay.
But who was the first?
We're getting options?
Yes, well, I'll give you four. How's that? Just make it extra hard. Okay. Was it A, Derek Jeter? Was it B, Melky Cabrera? Was it C, Manny Ramirez? Or was it D, David Ortiz? Ooh. I'm messing with your mind there. I gave you two Yankees and two Red Sox. But only one of them has won the All-Star Game MVP and the World Series MVP in the same year.
Okay, great
answer
question.
Later on in the show.
Great stuff. Right. Okay, there goes the bell. Great to have the bell back. We're going to hit off with our leadoff batter. We're 1 week back from the All-Star Game Midsummer Classic, which I love. It's neither midsummer nor is it normally a classic, but that's what they call it. It's only a 3-day week, as we all know. So first batter up, here is the news roundup. We're going to kick things off, guys, with just a quick look back. Home run derby. We can't walk on. Jimbo, I know we were chatting about it on our midweek show on the behind home plate. Pete Alonso, 35 home runs in the first round, a new record. We were anticipating a bit of a run fest because they weren't using the humidifier. We're in cores. We're at whatever, thousands of feet above sea level. But Pete Alonso, back-to-back champion. Only two others, Ken Griffey Jr., Yunis Cespedes, have ever achieved that. I love what Pete Alonso was doing. He was so into it, and he was so in the groove. And afterwards, this is a guy that's not on Monster Money, as we know. He donated $100,000 of his winnings to two of his favorite charities. Top man, top performance. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was incredibly impressive. He was just so in the groove, wasn't he? You know, just as they were flying out the stadium. I think really interesting. And the confidence he exuded after the event. I mean, you'd really thinking, you know, you put money on him for next year and the year after, you'd absolutely be there. I think the Mets will be delighted to have him back on form for the second half of the season.
But do you see that performance then transferring into real baseball for the second half of the season, him really kicking on as a Met?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I know people talk a lot about the curse. I don't think the curse is borne out in evidence. I think if you are striking the ball that well to set that kind of a record, you're going to be a very confident Pete Alonso walking into the stadium this week in the second half of the season, yes.
Okay. And Eric, I don't think we can move on talking about the home run derby without a mention of Trey Mancini. What a great story, buddy. I mean, the man was fighting for his life 2 years ago. What a comeback. beaten cancer, hopefully long term, and obviously an all-star, and he earned that right with a great first half of the season. And he was the total outsider in that home run derby, and yet went all the way to the final, and he pushed Pete Alonso all the way. What a story that is.
You know, yeah, I thought we were going to talk about the home run derby, but apparently now we're talking about a derby. I know it's...
You're outnumbered, buddy, 2-1.
Yeah, so the home run derby was actually... There are times where I thought, like, is the home run derby past the sell-by date? Is it getting a little tedious now? No, it was actually, it was fun to watch. Yes, it was fun to see Pete Alonso. And Trey Mancini, like you said, Johnny, it's like that, you can't even make that story up. You know, he was fighting for his life recently. And here he is, you know, knocking bombs out left, right, and center. You couldn't feel happy for the guy, even though he didn't win it. And what's Pete Alonso going to do? You know, it's like, he's sorry for hitting home runs. By the way, a quick stat. Did you know that Pete Alonso has made more money winning back-to-back home run derbies than he has?
$2 million, yeah.
Than he has with his salary with the New York Mets.
Yeah, that's a great stat, isn't it? What a great stat that is.
Love and no it. Wonder he was so happy. Absolutely. That smile.
Okay, I'm looking for a bus fare.
Yeah. Well, and this does, you know, feeds into the 2021 All-Star game itself, another victory for the AL. Obviously, no longer counts for home field advantage of the World Series, not since 2017. Therefore, the question one asks, does it really matter? Does it count? Some people are saying the home run derby is a bigger TV pull than the All-Star game itself. But I have to say, in defense of the All-Star game, and in fact, the home run derby, it is abundantly clear the players buy into it. They look like they're having the greatest time of their life. The kids are there, the family's there, everybody smiles and hugs. And to me, that's what makes it work. And I know you want to make a point, Eric, about the comparison between MLB's All-Star game and that of NBA, NHL, and even the NFL, which for the most part are pretty much jokes. MLB is getting this right.
They are, and it's an event. It's fun. People tune in. The players want to be there. The NFL Pro Bowl, and you know, it's just an excuse for players to go to Hawaii. But a lot of them don't even bother. You know, yes, you risk injury. As far as the NHL All-Star Game is concerned, I've actually seen defensemen lift their leg up and let the puck go in the net because they'd rather that happen than getting an injury during a poxy All-Star Game, and that won't mean anything for the NHL. And NBA, you know, okay, sure, the slam dunk competition is all fine and dandy, but it doesn't compare to the home run derby. And Major League Baseball, despite the fact, like you said, Johnny, that, you know, it doesn't mean anything, or it doesn't count for home advantage anymore, it's still fun, and the players still do try.
But Jimbo, I've got to pick up on the point, you know, Eric's mentioned about that in some of the other sports, they don't even bother turning up. But we did have an example of that this year for MLB. Both Correa and Altuve for the Astros both rejected or declined the invite to attend and to be a part of, preferring to rest up, you know, for the second half of the season. What's your view on that?
Yeah, obviously, as a fan, I think it's a shame. But I do think we've talked a lot about how baseball needs more marketable stars. And I do think having this event in the middle of the season is a fantastic opportunity. As you've talked, you know, just seeing Cedric Mullins and his family just grinning from ear to ear about just being there. Freddie Freeman, not his first term, but it's a huge event for his family and his son. And we talked about, you know, the ability for Charlie Freeman to meet Tatis Jr. I think it's a huge celebration, but ultimately, you know, they are professional athletes. The Houston Astros do want to win the World Series. It's not a surprise to me that occasionally players will choose to do that. I was disappointed to see hitters do it, to be honest. I can understand if you're a pitcher, you've got a slightly sore arm. I'm not sure I'd want to get worked up if it's not my first All-Star game. But hitters, I'd want to be there. It's a fantastic opportunity to market yourself, your next contract, sponsorship opportunities, etc.
100%. And do you know what, guys? Whenever I talk about players and I talk about their stats and their achievements, one of the things I always say, Hank Aaron, 25 All-Star starts. You know, you reference it as a mark of reference that this guy was a superstar. And I think players, the minute they start to undermine that, they undermine it at their, you know, fear what you fear. That will be my view. Embrace it as the rest do, because it is a cracker. Okay, well, let's move it on, guys. And I know this is something we referenced on Behind Home Plate as well, Jimbo. We did talk about this. So anybody out there that's listening in, we'd love to hear your views. Get in touch. You know the details. We'll be following up with that later on in the show. But do get in touch and give us your views on whether you think the All-Star Game, the Home Run Derby, is something that you are in support of, that you enjoy watching. Okay, moving on. Jock Pederson to the Braves. First big trade. I'm assuming, Jimbo, this is cover for Acuña Jr. Is it too little, too late, pointless? What's your thoughts?
Specifically around the Braves, this isn't necessarily something I would have done. As you know, in my view, the Braves should certainly look at being sellers. They've got a very tricky stretch now. And, you know, I think it's going to be really difficult. More broadly, yeah, I think this is the start of a number of dominoes beginning to fall throughout the trade, before the deadline on July the 30th. So a lot to happen. I think there are two clubs that to me are slightly surprise sellers. So I think you've got the Cubs and you've got the Twins. So the Cubs, I think the two biggest pieces moved arguably in this entire trade deadline will be Chris Bryant and possibly Craig Kimbrell of the Cubs. And I think the Twins as well, another sort of high-performing team who've had a very bad season. I think you might see a number of pieces move from the Twins, say somebody like, you know, they've said they're not going to move anybody from the 2022 team. I don't think you see Jose Berrios on the move, but I think you will see somebody like Nelson Cruz, who will be an incredibly helpful addition to a number of contenders, whether it's Oakland or somebody else.
Jimbo, I understand that. I understand that from a Twins point of view. They're 16 games back as of recording today on the 18th, 12 and a half games back in the wildcard race. I could see the thoughts are, unless they have a major turnaround, they are not going to be competitive. They're not playing postseason baseball. But look at the Cubs. They're hitting .500 on the season. They're only 8 games back of Milwaukee. They're only 7 games back in the wildcard race. A couple of decent weeks, they're right back in it. It really surprises me that you're saying basically the Cubs are going to be sellers.
Yeah, I think they've already announced it, really. They've got a lot of players coming to the end of their contracts at the end of this season. And it's not so much the amount of where they are. They've got to get past an awful lot of teams to get there. The pitching isn't that strong. I would be astonished if you're not seeing 3 or 4 big names move from the Cubs. I think they are looking to see if they can re-sign Anthony Rizzo, re-sign Javier Baez. If they can't extend those guys, I think they'll be on the move as well. I think that's Wrigley will absolutely be the epicentre of the trade market, I think, this year. I mean, equally, there are other people around, plenty of other big bats. I think Starling Marte, if the Marlins can't extend him, you might see Starling Marte on the move. And the other big bat I think is really interesting is Joey Gallo. So he's been linked from Texas with both San Diego, who always like a trade, and also today with the Yankees. And if you think what Gallo could do, both in Yankee Stadium or at the heart of the Padres lineup, I think he could be a really interesting addition as well.
We've had this discussion on the other podcast of Behind Home Plate about the Braves. That your view was that they are sellers. I don't think they are. And certainly from what I've heard and seen on Twitter, they're not making those sort of noises. But your argument now is, irrespective of whether they are or they aren't, they should be. Why do you feel that? Why should the Braves be sellers right now? And if they are going to be sellers, who are they selling?
I think you're right. It would appear Braves ownership feels very different to me. I feel there are several other teams in there. We're under .500. We've got a really difficult stretch. I think the next 10 games will absolutely define the Braves season. If we do choose to sell, and if we don't win like 8 out of those 10 games, I absolutely would be. I think the real catch of the Braves is that we have Charlie Morton, a veteran pitcher, who I think would be coveted by a number of teams. And if there is one thing that this trade deadline is missing, it is impact starting pitching. And Charlie Morton would probably be the leading trade candidate. So if I was the Braves, I'd give it another 10 games, see how I was looking at that. But if I'm still under .500, if I'm still underneath 2 or 3 teams in the NL East, I would absolutely be looking to trade Charlie Morton. And I think you get a pretty decent price for him.
Eric, just before we move on from this, looking at Toronto, obviously with your Canadian hat on, only 7.5 games back of Boston. More importantly, only 4 games back in the wildcard race as of today, the 18th. And to me, they are a team. They've got a phenomenal hitting lineup. That's not their issue. They've got a plus 80 run differential right now. Scoring runs is not their problem. It's preventing runs from being scored against them that is the issue. Therefore, they need an arm. Do you see them going out and being buyers?
Funny enough, what I do have some inside information from Canadian friends of mine who work in sports media back home. Now, can I just add, by the way, I'm not a Blue Jays fan anyway. Being a Montrealer and being a Tigers fan, that sandwich is right in the middle of the Blue Jay territory. It goes against my principles to root for the Blue Jays. But I do have a lot of Blue Jay friends. And the inside news is, a trader rumor is that Chris Bryant to the Blue Jays is a possibility.
Yeah, he's not a very good pitcher, though, is he?
But it could fill a void. It's maybe he just needs a change.
Well, I'm not. I think it's phenomenal for him in a lineup like that.
And he'll be able to have maple syrup access.
Which is that so
lineup,
important.
Toronto's lineup with Chris. I can't see how they'd fit him in, but that would be absolutely the best lineup in baseball, hands down. I think.
Jimbo, is it not already? I mean, honestly, from top to bottom, would you not say that that is the best hitting lineup in baseball right now?
It, certainly, given the parks they've been able to hit in for most of the first half of the season, absolutely. And to your point, to me, the Blue Jays should absolutely be looking for some solid starting pitching to pair with Robbie Ray and Ryu at the top of their lineup.
And guys, can I make a point here? If the rumours are true, and Eric was telling us at the top of the show that the Blue Jays are going back to Canada for their home games, how big an impact is that going to have on their offensive numbers? Because they have been hitting in basically a little league park, which has been absolutely, for me, exploding their hitting numbers beyond what they should be. They go back to Toronto. I think you could see a bit of a downturn in their offensive numbers. So they're going to need to get their arms going. Just my thoughts.
I wouldn't be too worried. It's not a bad place to hit. And I think you've got so many quality hitters in that lineup.
Yeah.
It's not fluky what they've been doing. Absolutely. I think you'll be talking more sort of 10 runs a night rather than 15 or 16 like you've been seeing. But yeah, if I'm a Blue Jays fan, I am so excited about having my team back in my city and seeing that lineup being better than anything they've been putting on the field for the last 5 or 10 years. So
fantastic. Especially since they haven't been able to see them in 2 years almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on.
Well, guys, we're going to round things up as always, Eric, with the Badu watch, a view to Akil. Akil Badu, our dear friend. Thank you to Craig for the name. I think he's only had 3 games. Eric, how's he gone on?
He's still been platooning, and he still has a decent on base percentage. And let's face it, one thing that we're not talking about is if someone was said to me a few weeks ago, who's more likely to go down to the minors, Akil Badu or Yermin Mercedes? I would have said, well, Akil Badu, obviously. Yeah. Well, lo and behold, guess what happened? The Yerminator has been sent down to AAA. He won the Rookie of the Year the month of April, and he was hitting .361. Then in May went down. In June, he was hitting a paltry .159. And I think La Russa said, okay, you're going down. And here's where, now the thing is, the White Sox are a contending team.
Yeah.
And the Tigers, let's face it, my beloved Tigers, who I have a major soft spot for, even the wild card is out of reach. And they're just going through the motions. They're trying to nurture the team. They're going to give the kid a chance. They're going to give Akil Badu, okay, let's throw a few more games at him. Let him develop into this season. And why not? There's no point trading. And now that there's the halfway point is the season's gone. What else are you going to do? Let's let the kid play. And that's why he's still being platooned and playing the odd game here and there. And still not playing great, but not playing miserably.
I love how much you guys like Badu and the Yerminator. But they've been brilliant stories. They really have. So, yeah.
Hey, anybody's got a burger named after them.
Yeah. So, Jimbo, quite obvious, you're not a fan of Akil Badu. I'm assuming, therefore, you've never picked him up one of your fancy teams. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm so stats-led that, I'm looking at them for both of them. Actually, the Yerminator was, a brilliant story, a fantastic nickname. But, that was an April story. It was always going to end up this way. Badu, I think, actually has got more talent. But, I don't think he's going to be carrying a fantasy team to glory. But, he was sensational. And, as we talked many times, fantasy baseball is about, finding players when they're hot. He was hot. And I think, he's been a fantastic. He's somebody who plays the game with that much energy, enthusiasm. It's just brilliant. And, great example to people.
Well, buddy, the Badu watch is Eric's baby, and yet he hasn't even referenced his stats for the week. He slagged him off, said he shouldn't be there. He's only in the major league because he's in a non-contending team. He played in 3 games. He went 3 for 9, 2 runs, 1 home run, 6 RBIs. I wish I had any player who was returning those.
Yeah,
stats.
You're right. In 3 games, here, come on, let's
absolutely happy days.
Thank you for acknowledging that I overlooked his stats.
You did indeed.
Apologies.
And I would also like to point out his season OBP is still very impressive, .350. The bad news, his July OBP, .256. That is a worry. Ring that bell. Okay, sounds like the bell needs another MOT. We're moving on. Batter number two, second half of the section, boys. We don't need to go through all the divisions, except some I think are already pretty straightforward. I'm interested in your view on a team that might potentially make a charge, you know, whether that be a Toronto Blue Jays, 7.5 games back of Boston. Can Boston maintain their position? I mean, if we're talking about the competitive divisions, I'm assuming we're talking certainly AL East, no question. I mean, even the Yankees potentially still in it. We're certainly talking the NL West and the NL East. Those are the three where I think I don't think right now you could predict a winner, could you?
Of the World Series or of
each of those divisions? No, of those divisions. Of those divisions, yeah. Just a team to make it to the postseason. I mean, you look at the NL East, for instance, when you consider no team in the NL is going to make the wild card that doesn't come from the NL West. We know that. So basically, the three teams of the NL West, the Giants, the Dodgers, the Padres, all three are going to make the postseason because two of them are going to be the wild card. I cannot see that changing. Therefore, for the likes of Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Cubs, who you're now saying are sellers, but Atlanta, Washington, their only way to the postseason is to win their division. And for my money, all of them can potentially still win their division. Do you agree, James?
I think the Mets, you know, their recent history would suggest that they're not necessarily a team who are comfortable leading the league. They haven't kind of pushed on and won it in recent years. So I think all of the Nationals and the Braves and the Phillies, all of whom, you know, have won the World Series in sometime in the last sort of years and have had a lot of success, will all feel that the Mets are catchable. Jacob deGrom's just gone back on the injured list today. You know, there's a lot to happen. I think the Mets will need to be very, very active. I think if the Mets got Chris Bryant, for example, I think that'll be very, very interesting. You really want a team outside of that? I think it's hard. I think already you've kind of got 10 or 12 teams who are going. If I had, you know, two big predictions for the season, one would be I think you're going to get a run fest. I just think the weather's heating up, hitters are in their groove, starting pitchers won't be going that deep into the season after the short season last season. I think you're just going to get so many runs in the second half of this season. We haven't had anybody get 100 more than 150 RBIs this century, apart from one time when Alex Rodriguez did it. I think you might get it this season from somebody like Vlad or Rafael Devers. I really think there's going to be that many of them. And that means, you know, kind of teams like sort of Toronto and stuff do have a chance, but I just feel things are separating into kind of teams who are up for it and teams who aren't. I think you're going to see quite a lot of teams unloading pieces at the deadline and really kind of hoping for a decent pick next season. On the flip side, I think you've got 10 or 12 teams who are going to absolutely go for it in the second half of the season. It's going to be really exciting, and arguably you're going to get some of the best playoffs we've had in years.
Okay, that's an interesting prediction. I want to stay with the National League, Eric, and I want to ask you a question. Irrespective of who wins the East, whether it be the Mets who lead at the moment, irrespective of who wins the Central, and I've always said that I thought the Brewers going to, and presently they're six games ahead of Cincinnati, is any of that relevant when it comes to the National League Championship Series? Because right now, I cannot see any name outside of the West winning the National League. What are your thoughts?
That's the thing, because now we actually reaching the point of like, okay, now let's look at the wildcard contenders. That could be the party poopers.
Yeah.
But let me put it this way. Okay, as I said earlier, that I was immersed in Wimbledon for the past 2 weeks. I was working crazy shift. I was there 24/7 almost. And believe it or not, I was talking baseball and ice hockey with John McEnroe, Denis Shapovalov, and Billie Jean King.
Wow.
And you know what they said to me?
They said, who are you?
No, they said, Eric, never name drop. They said, no, they basically, what the interesting thing is, because I was talking with Denis Shapovalov about the NHL Stanley Cup was happening, and he's also a Blue Jays fan, and I was talking Yankees Mets with McEnroe, and they were saying baseball is one of those few sports you take your eye off the ball for just a few days, and you know this for being fantasy baseball enthusiasts. You look at the standings one day, 3 days, 4 days, or in my case, 2 weeks, you know, sort of keeping a blind eye or taking a quick glance at the standings. It's changed so much in 2 weeks. And now we're reaching crunch time where National League East, case in point, hey, the Mets could blow this. That is such a messy division when the second place team is under 500 most of the year. And who knows? It could be that the first place team could finish under 500 as well. But that's a beautiful.
That would be disastrous, wouldn't it?
Well, they're 528 right now. They're 528 right now.
They are, Johnny. But there's another team in that division. You asked the question, who could surprise us? I will tell you who could. The Washington Nationals. If you're heading in, the playoffs is always, I don't know, people say a crapshoot. I'm sure there's a better way of saying that. But it is a best of five or best of seven kind of game. And sometimes, you know, even the playing game is best of one. The Nationals can line up Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg, if they can get him fit, is not a bad 1-2 to be going into a playoff. And they've got a lineup then with Trey Turner and Juan Soto, two of the top five batters, I would say, in Major League Baseball this season. So, you know, to me, in a five or seven game, you know, short period of time, anybody can do it. And I think, you know, the Nationals are exactly the kind of team with some genuine superstars on it, all of whom won it 2 years ago. They could be your team.
Okay, there's your prediction. Right, guys, before we close this section out, I want to ask some specific questions. You can just give me one-word answers. Okay, AL East is completely competitive. Who's going to win the AL East, Eric?
It'll be, much to my chagrin, I'm sure the Blue Jays will somehow get it together going back to Toronto.
Okay, wow. Okay, that's a big call. They're 7.5 games back at the moment of Boston. What about you, Jimbo?
Red Sox.
Red Sox. Okay, I'm going with Tampa Bay. 1.5
great,
games back.
Great season, hitting well.
Ooh. Yeah. But their pitching ain't good enough. That's my view. And that's gonna bite them in the ass before the season's out. Okay, I think we all know the White Sox are going to win the Central. The AL West, I mean, obviously everybody's just talking about Houston and Oakland. But you know what? Seattle and the Angels, they're not out of it. But personally, I still think, I did say Oakland Athletics at the beginning of the season. I'm beginning to think actually Houston, who are 3.5 games ahead, they seem to be hitting unbelievably well. I'm struggling now. I think probably Astros in the AL West. What about you two?
I think Dusty's going to bring it together.
Okay, Dusty's the man, yeah. Jimbo, you with Dusty?
I'm not with Bus. I've never been a massive Dusty fan, but yeah, it's hard to look past the Astros the way things are working. Altuve's back to form, and they've got pitching.
If I'd known you weren't a Dusty fan, you wouldn't have been invited on this show. Everybody's a Dusty fan.
You all love Dusty.
How can you not be a Dusty fan?
He always gave us time and we interviewed him.
Exactly. Not a Dusty fan. What an extraordinary thing to say.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on. Yeah, hit that damn bell. Okay, quickly, NL East. Jimbo, who's going to win the NL East?
Disappointingly, the Mets.
Okay. Do you know what? I hate to say this because I do think that we're out of it, unfortunately. But I think you're right. I think it'll be either Philadelphia or Washington. I'm going to go with the Phillies. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, it'd be the Mets. Let's keep David happy.
Okay, Central, I think we all think Milwaukee, yes?
No. I say Joey Votto erupts and a man of fine Canadian stock will carry the Reds to victory.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
Votto. Yeah. Jimbo, I'm assuming that you're with the Brewers, aren't you?
I think that pitching is hard to beat, but the team I always never bet against, the Cardinals. I know they're not doing amazingly, but they're pretty solid. But yeah, I'd like it to be the Brewers. I think it's more interesting. I like things to be shared around. I'd love the Brewers to have a really deep playoff run.
Yeah, okay. Well, it'd be good to see them. St. Louis, by the way, 9 games back at the moment, 8 games back in the wild card. I can't see them coming back from that. Okay, the big one, guys, before we close this out, who is going to win the West? The Giants, the Dodgers, or San Diego? San Diego, 5.5 games back at the moment. So it would seem it's between the Giants and the Dodgers. But you know what? It's just one of those things. I'm going to be the one that goes first here. I just can't see the Dodgers over the full stretch of a season with the lineup they've got, as great as the Giants have been, and they've been amazing. I just cannot see the Dodgers. They're only one game back. I can't see anybody but the Dodgers winning the division. James?
No, I'm with you. Okay. It's the depth of squad that they have.
Absolutely.
It's the full 25-man roster is stronger, I think, than anybody else's.
And Eric, obviously you love an underdog, so I'm assuming you're going to say Arizona.
No, I'm going to no, Giants. Giants.
Okay. Give them Giants some love. Love it.
And by the way, it's still not impossible. Of course, don't forget the worst record in baseball is the 1962 New York Mets with 40-122. Right. So it's not impossible that Arizona can break that, tie it.
Hey, they've won 3 of the last 10. I think they're going to make sure that doesn't happen. Anyway, we wish Arizona all the best. Right, let's move it on. Hit that bell, please. Okay, third batter up, and this one specifically for my dear friend Eric. Lovely to have you back from Wimbledon, Eric. That is the Tokyo Olympics. Baseball. Well, they've made such a song and dance about baseball in previous Olympics. We obviously were mortified when it got dropped from the London Olympics because the impact it was going to have, the positive impact on the infrastructure of the game here in the UK. And obviously without it, it was an absolute disaster. But the question has to be asked, Eric. One, there's been virtually zero marketing. I'm not even sure a lot of people are aware that baseball is happening in the Tokyo Olympics. Therefore, who cares? Has it got to the point where you have to be honest and ask that question? Should baseball really be an Olympic sport? The floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, well, the old adage of when people say, if Olympic gold is the pinnacle of success for your sport, then yes, it should be an Olympic sport. Okay. Now, does baseball / softball, can I add, be in that category? Well, let's look at the other sports. Tennis, what's more important, winning Wimbledon or winning Olympic gold?
Winning Wimbledon.
Okay, now Novak Djokovic is off to Tokyo to win a Golden Slam because he's won the French Open. He's won Wimbledon last week. And now he's going to try to, you know, he's added a few other ones from, you know, the U.S. Open. And so he wants to get that Olympic gold, but still eludes him. Now, is that just greediness for his trophy cabinet or should it remain an amateur sport? Throw it in for baseball. Now, here's the thing. I'll say for softball, people forget women's softball is actually opening the Olympics. It's actually starting before the opening ceremonies. Traditionally, it's always been football that would start before the opening ceremonies, but they're actually softball is going to be the beginning sports for the Tokyo 2020/21 Olympics. But hear me out here. Who is on the? I bet you guys can't even name how many countries there are, let alone who is in it. There are six countries. That's correct, James. Who held up six? But again, it's poorly marketed. MLB didn't do anything to cross-reference, cross-promote. Saying, "Oh, don't forget to keep an eye on Team USA," who is actually manager Mike Socha, who actually on the Team USA team, Scott Kazmir. Remember him?
Gotcha. Is he still playing?
He's on the U.S. Olympic team. He's going for Olympic gold. Todd Frazier, Edwin Jackson on Team USA. Don't forget now, Eddie Alvarez, who? But he also won Olympic gold in the Winter Olympics in speed skating. So now he's going to try to win Olympic gold for baseball. So there's a story there. Okay. Now, the other teams, Dominican Republic are in it. Melky Cabrera. Hey, he's
Yay, a Melky.
Melky's yeah. Going for Olympic gold, which means that he would actually have won a World Series and Olympic gold if he wants to win. So one of the few people who can do that. Let's look at Mexico. Joaquim Soria is there. Let's look at Israel. Ian Kinsler. Ian Kinsler's playing in the Olympics for Israel.
Ranger, was he?
The Texas Rangers, Detroit Tiger. Yeah. Now there's a big bone of contention about Israel because basically it's about a passport. A lot of people who play for Israel has never even set foot in Israel. So that's I'm not going to go down that political route that anybody who is of Jewish descent automatically gets an Israeli passport, which also means if you're any good at baseball, why not go off to represent Israel in the Olympics? So all the actual players who qualify for the Olympics all of a sudden been told, step aside, kid, we're going to let some former major leaguers take it from here, which is unfair. Not the Olympic spirit, in my opinion. But should we be watching it? Well, hey, I don't think the BBC will be doing much coverage. I'll be there next week, not in Tokyo, unfortunately, but I'll be at BBC Manchester trying to say, look, at least show this game, Mexico against USA or Dominican Republic. It'll be fun to watch. Don't forget, host nation, Japan. The infrastructure's there. They didn't have to build new stadiums. It's a baseball-crazy country. It already was, by the way, the first sold-out event before any other sport. However, they've just announced no spectators. So very tragic that The Olympic baseball will not be getting those crazy Japanese crowds with their thunder sticks and making a lot of noise.
But can I offer you my? Can I just offer my quick sixpence? I'll come to you in a minute, Jimbo. I'm just going to offer you my quick sixpence on this. One, I don't understand. If you're going to do it, six teams in the Olympics. I mean, in what other sport in the Olympics are they only got six countries being represented? That seems a nonsense to me. If you're going to do it properly. That's the first thing I'd say. Secondly, I totally hold to that adage that you referenced at the top. For me, an Olympic sport is one where the Olympics is the pinnacle of achievement. Therefore, golf, tennis, baseball, none of them should be in the Olympics.
Okay, rugby sevens. Rugby sevens, which is the Olympics.
Yeah, no, but I think the Olympic gold medal at rugby sevens would be the pinnacle. I don't think there is a competition that would match that. So I don't have a problem with rugby sevens. Rugby 15, no, absolutely not. Rubbish. Football, rubbish. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. I feel really strongly about this. This is why I got really annoyed and miffed when Andy Murray was asked to carry the flag at the Olympics for the Great Britain team. Now, this is not having a pop at Andy Murray. He's been an amazing servant to Great Britain and to British tennis and an absolute superstar. And he's an amazing guy and an amazing sportsman. But the Olympics, one, is not the home of tennis. Two, that it shouldn't be a sport that's involved in tennis. And three, I'm really sorry. He's got his moment. He's got his Wimbledon. He's got his US Open. There are guys, women and men, who have dedicated their life to their Olympic sport, a sport that should be an Olympic sport, who should have been carrying that flag because that's such an honour. Why are you giving that to a guy who's already had every honour thrown at him? He's been knighted, for God's sake, before his career's even over. How stupid is that? Anyway, that's another thing. Jimbo, what's your thoughts? Should baseball be in the Olympics?
I think you two should, you know, maybe tell us what you really think about this issue.
Pick up the fist, Johnny.
I feel really strongly about this. It really annoys me.
I think I feel less strongly than you two. I kind of feel if something's worth doing, it's worth doing properly. And it feels to me that this isn't a tournament that's done properly. And I kind of feel I'd rather have it more like the basketball when you've got the US basketball team, you've got some genuinely legendary superstars. I just feel the team that's going out there as a baseball fan isn't particularly interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's some quite interesting minor leaguers. So I'd be quite interested in Simeon Woods Richardson and stuff like that. So there's some players I'd be interested in, but it doesn't feel important to me as a massive baseball fan to be watching baseball at the Olympics. So
it doesn't excite you, which at the end of the day, I mean, that tells its own story. Okay, we'd love to hear your view. If you are listening in on the podcast, please tell us where you think baseball should be in the Olympics, and we'll try and reference those on our next show.
And should I push the BBC to show more Olympic baseball games instead of skateboarding and mountain climbing, rock climbing?
You're best friends with John McEnroe, Billy Jean. I mean, I'm sure you're the man for the job. Ah!
There we go. Moving on.
Okay, seventh inning stretch time. Jimbo, this is what we do on the seventh inning. So in case anyone's watching on YouTube, just give us a stretch, please. Baseball book of the week. What a joy to have Eric back, because it means I don't have to go and find one. What have you got for us, sir?
Well, baseball book of the week. And I chose this week because we are sans Josh Chetwynd.
Yeah.
Since Chetwynd isn't here, I can actually recommend what I think should be on everybody's bookshelf. Baseball book of the week this week is Ball 4 by Jim Boughton. Now, I say my top five, perhaps top three of all-time baseball books, Ball 4. There's a lot of people out there who will agree with me. Roger Hook, I'm looking at you as well, who is a great follower of the show and, of course, is one of the few people who managed to see all 30 baseball stadiums in 32 days. Now, he is with me that it is one of the best baseball books ever. The only problem with it is that it's a tell-all book, and the reason why Josh hates Ball 4, and that's why I'm happy that he's not here today, because he would just be chastising me recommending this. He would be belittling the Jim Boughton and Ball 4 because it breaks the dressing room code, because it what goes on tour stays on tour, and he's just basically told exactly what happens behind the scenes of a Major League Baseball team, which, hey, for people like us, is very insightful. It's a lot of stuff in here is not for kids, it's not for children bedtime reading, that's for sure. But at the time, the Major League Baseball commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, tried to make him sign an affidavit saying it was all fictional, that it was a fairy tale, that none of it was true, and he refused. And he got blacklisted, he got booed everywhere he went. There was a famous story about Pete Rose and from the opposite dugout. Once the book is released, he was still playing. that he would just stand up at the end of the dugout and yell to him while he's on the pitcher's mound, saying "F you, Shakespeare," because he basically broke the code of conduct of telling what happens behind the scenes. So that's my baseball book of the week without Josh interrupting. This is great. I love this show.
And do you know what, buddy? I'm glad you've recommended this because I think this is a great read. You know, and I've had a quick look at it as well. And I love the reality that the controversy that surrounded this caused him to write a sequel entitled "I'm Glad You Didn't Take It Personally," which he discussed both the controversies and reaction to ball four. And of course, the end of his original pitching career. And I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, there's a couple of players, you know, particularly famous players, Mickey Mantle, to be example, that he referenced his lifestyle, that he was a seriously hard party animal. That didn't go down too well, but he was also incredibly complimentary about Mickey Mantle. It wasn't all just, you know, tittle tattle and behind the scenes and betraying confidences. But I sort of am a bit split down the middle, because I think if I was a player that shared a changing room with him, what goes on tour stays on tour, I'd be a bit miffed if it was all there in print. What a great book. And he, by the way, celebrated his birthday 8 days ago. So happy 80th birthday to Jim Bowden.
He passed away.
Did he? Still.
He's dead.
Oh, sorry. He died on July the 10th. I do apologize. That's my fault. Oh, I'm sorry.
Happy birthday anyway.
No, that was day he died. It wasn't
Boy, you'd be awkward at a funeral. Hey, happy birthday.
Oh, my God. That's
doing that casket.
Can we edit this out? No, obviously not.
No, it's just quality television.
Okay.
So, I think there's a regular segment here, isn't there? You know, whenever Josh isn't here, that Eric's got a whole box of things that Josh doesn't like. And, like, you know, we'll pull one out every week. So.
Oh, there are many.
Jimbo, what we expect when Eric's not, when Eric is here and Josh isn't, is that finally, after 30-something episodes of the Johnny and Josh Show, the book of the week will be one of the five Josh Chetwood books that he could choose and has never done so. So, you know, JC leaves on the off chance that his book will get a mention. Even then, it doesn't get a mention. He puts a book out that Josh hates. So that's how much Eric loves it.
No love lost. Moving on.
Yeah. So our baseball cultural reference, I'm rather excited about this, Eric. You're changing tack. We're going down a musical front.
Now, usually when I do pop culture, you know, intertwining with baseball or baseball intertwining with pop culture, I usually pick a movie or a TV show. But, you know, somebody mentioned, how come we don't ever do music? And that's a valid point, because there are many baseball songs out there. You know, like of course, we could talk about Center Field with John Fogerty. We could talk Take Me Out of the Ball Game with Bruce Springsteen. You know, there's loads of baseball songs, but it's a dying art. You don't hear many baseball tunes coming out of the day. Now, I went down a rabbit hole, one of those wonderful things where there are so many layers that sort of, and I found out about this woman, Jane Morgan. Who? Exactly. Who the hell is Jane Morgan? Now, she was a songstress in the late 40s and 50s. And bear with me, this has relevance to baseball. So she decided to, you know, because she was bilingual, she actually decided, after sort of making mini success in New York, she moved to Paris and started singing songs in French. Then she moved back to the States, and she was struggling because getting her career going. She went up to Montreal, a fun city, might I add, because she sung both in French and in English. But she wanted to get back into the American top 40, or like at least chart or something. And it's the only way she could do that, where people would counteract that she's just some chick from France, which she isn't. She's actually American. She came out with this little song.
My heart knew such humiliation that I sat and planned retaliation, using the wiles known to all women. I'd marry that man if it was human. The wedding bells rang, we were one in June. Triumphantly we went on our honeymoon. He held me very tight under stars so bright and whisper, darling, who do you love tonight? I told him, baseball, baseball, the Tigers and baseball, baseball, Ted Williams and baseball, baseball. I love the game, baseball, Yankees, Red Legs, Braves, White Sox, Indians, Phillies, Senators, Red Sox, Orioles, Athletics, Pirates, baseball, baseball, baseball.
Now, that's just an excerpt of that song. And the reason why she chose a song about baseball is to say, is basically a cry for help, saying, look, I am American. See, I came out with a baseball tune. And the thing is, in 1954, it didn't chart, but it made her more believable, and she went on Broadway, all because she wrote a song about, or sung a song about baseball. And if you'll, we'll actually release the entire song at the end of the show, so you can appreciate it even more. But one of those unsung heroines of music that made, put baseball, you know, into music. But I had to look up.
Let's be honest.
She's alive still.
Oh, she is?
She's 97 years old.
But you made us listen to it. It's not exactly the best tune.
Hey, 1954. I mean, what do you expect?
It's the lyrics, Johnny. That's what you're making.
It's the lyrics about baseball. Well, it's like it's Doris Day-esque.
Well, hang on. If you're going to talk lyrics, what was the Red Legs reference? What was that all about?
Oh, okay. Well, see, I'm glad you asked, actually, because when that song got released in 1954, the Cincinnati Reds were no longer called the Cincinnati Reds. They had to change their name to the Red Legs for a few years.
Okay.
So whenever you're confused and say, why were they, what is this Red Legs team? Well, the Cincinnati Reds, because of McCarthyism, they wanted to, you know, and of course the Red Menace and the communism is evil, the evil empire. They believe it or not, for 4 years, they changed their name to the Cincinnati Red Legs to not be associated with communism.
Wow. And I just assumed she'd got the red socks wrong. Maybe it was meant to be red leggings or something.
Actually, when the Cincinnati Reds first came out, it was they were called the Cincinnati Red Stockings, then the Reds, then the Red Legs. Now they're just back to being the Cincinnati Reds. There you go.
Fantastic. All right, buddy. Well, thank you for going down the musical line. By the way, we'll play that song at the end, so you can judge for yourself whether you think it's a decent tune.
One more thing about that as well is, like, last year there was a fire at Universal Music, and all her original recordings were destroyed. But luckily, that one survived. So that's why I thought, like, you know, let's bring it like a phoenix out of the ashes. The Johnny Josh Show managed to, you know, resurrect music.
Anyway. Oh, buddy, you asked a question at the top of the show. It was the Eric's trivia. Who is
the only
player to be both an All-Star Game MVP and a World Series MVP in the same year? Will you remind us who our four options were? Please?
That's right. I gave you the options of A, Derek Jeter, B, Melky Cabrera.
Yeah.
C, Manny Ramirez, or D, David Ortiz. Which of those four players is the only one to have hit to have been All-Star Game MVP and World Series MVP in the same year?
Have you got any thoughts on this, Jimbo?
Well, I have, but they're ill-informed thoughts. It'd be fair to say they're not based on any kind of. I mean, I'm hoping it's not Jeter, because if it was, surely that'd be something everybody would know. Which means I'm kind of down to Manny and David Ortiz because they're the great players. So I reckon this is a complete curveball, because the fact that he's even in this list, he just stands out a mile, which is Melky Cabrera. So I'm going to go for Melky Cabrera.
Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Because I did have that thought that it seemed a very odd introduction. Is that why? But I can't get away from Big Pappy. David Ortiz is the one I keep coming back to. I don't know why. Back of my head. Eric, put me out of my misery. I'm going with Big Pappy.
Okay. I'll just tell you right now that it wasn't a Red Sox. And all of them have either won one or the other, but it was Derek Jeter who won both in 1 year.
So hang on. So we both got it wrong, but the one that you said definitively it wasn't, Jimbo, is the one that it was. That is an absolute result.
Yeah. It's an oafer. You know, it's a disastrous.
That's
a minus.
In the year 2000, Derek Jeter won both the All-Star Game and the World Series MVP.
Can I make a suggestion, Eric? Whenever we do the in-game trivia, can we get Jimbo on just for this section? Because it makes me feel an awful lot better.
Makes you look better, right?
Absolutely. Fantastic stuff.
Well, still okay. Batting zero. It's Jimbo again. Yeah.
Hey, Eric, I still don't think I've got one right this season, and it's a 1-4. I mean, you could ask an animal, and they'd be doing better than
that. Okay, I haven't done the waffle reference yet, by the way. I have to.
I'll move it on.
Not that warrants it, but. My first waffle reference to the day, because you guys have been behaving unlike the other two reprobates usually on the show.
Okay, well, let's move it on. Talking about the mailbag, as always, we'd love to hear from you on Twitter. It's at Johnny and Josh, the Facebook site, The Johnny and Josh Show. And do get in touch if you possibly can. I just want to mention a quick reference on the Facebook site, which I hadn't done and I would like to do. Our good friend Mike Dowling, the San Francisco Giants number one fan, he's been very supportive of the show back in the day on Channel 5 and both the podcasts. He references the ongoing sticky substance, and he's talking about the whole scandal and the impact, etc. He asked a question without some merit. Should all the no-hitters of this season, because we know there's been so many more than normal, should they have an asterisk against themselves? Because there is the question as to whether or not the use of a sticky substance has not been a part of the problem. Jimbo, is this one of those routes that is far too sort of prone to difficulty and complication to even consider?
Yeah, it wouldn't be my... I can understand the frustrations. I can understand the unknowns, but... I mean, to me, it's far more of an art than it is a science. And I don't think there's any clear evidence of things not happening or happening. So I don't know, it's always around the margins, isn't it? It's like, you know, British cycling trying to shave hundreds of seconds off. I think this is all about people just trying to do the best job they possibly can. Maybe some people take it a tiny bit too far, but no, I think stats should stand.
Okay. Well, we all know how we felt about the asterisks going up against Roger Maris's home run charge and the run, you know, when he out-hit the Babe at 60. Yeah. I mean, I've always felt that was petty beyond all extremes and unnecessary. Good news, by the way, Eric. You know, we've been pumping the Johnny and Josh Show Twitter account. As you know, we ran a competition to reach 2,000. We're up another 16 followers. We're up to 2,092. Loving that. Keep them coming, guys. Get the family, get the children, get the dog to follow us on Twitter.
Is that because I was away?
Well, I don't want to be the one that points out the obvious, but yeah, we seem to be flying at the moment. As always, do get involved. The old social handles, the Twitter handles. Behind home plate, by the way, if you're into fantasy baseball, Jimbo has been so kind to join us on the Johnny and Josh Show. Is my brother and fellow podcaster on at BHP Pod. Do, of course, watch and listen to the Nat Coombs Show. That's at the NC Show. We're on all sort of formats, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Subscribe, like, become a part of the family. Boys, we're near the end. Thank you so much, both of you, for taking time out. What are you off to, Eric? You've got to start the Olympics next week, is that right?
Yeah, after opening ceremony start on this weekend coming up. And so I'll be on Olympic duty, and hopefully I'll be back with you guys as soon as that Olympic flame is extinguished.
And how many weeks is that, buddy? How many weeks do we lose you for?
17 days, whatever that is.
Okay, so that's about 3 weeks.
It's over 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And what about you, Jimbo? You hard work, you're busy out there in the garden. I know you're not somebody who likes...
I love it. Eric is off on Olympic duty, yeah, and I will be finishing this podcast and going on dog walking duty. So, yeah, I think it just says the difference of the lives, you know, the AAA midweeker, you know, this remains a big moment, you know, hanging out with the heavy hitters of the sports broadcast.
Whereas, Jimbo, I was, as you know, hot-footing it back to do this podcast from a stag do. Never thought at my age I'd be on a stag. Yes, my good mate, Mike Fryer, we had a momentous weekend up in London. So wishing Mike and the lovely Kim all the best of their married life. That's happening in August, but we have the stag do. So needless to say, I need to go and lie down. Thank you to everybody. Thank you particularly to Eric and James for joining me. But that's it from the show. You've been listening to the Johnny and Josh Show. Thank you for your company. We look forward to seeing you next week. And we leave you with Jane Morgan's 1954 song, Baseball, Baseball. Enjoy.
Met a lad, handsome and witty, who whispered to me, "You are so pretty." Soon he and I were cabareting. We had a good time, goes without saying. He came to my house, all the lights were low, and then he held me close, set my heart aglow. He told me that my lips were as sweet as wine. With that he put his two lips close to mine and talked of baseball, baseball, the Dodgers and baseball, baseball, Stan Musial and baseball, baseball, all through the night, baseball, baseball. I was so mad, I got to thinking, surely this lad will start me drinking, for there was me, eager and healthy, in love with a he. Handsome and wealthy, I tried to get him in my sweet embrace. All he had on his mind was the pen and trace. And though I saw him practically every night, We never went to movies or saw a fight. We just saw baseball, baseball. DiMaggio and baseball, baseball. Chicago Cubs, baseball, baseball. DeRozier and baseball, baseball. My heart knew such humiliation that I sat and planned retaliation using the wiles known to all women. I'd marry that man if it was human. The wedding bells rang, we were one in June. Triumphantly we went on a honeymoon. He held me very tight under stars so bright and whispered, darling, who do you love tonight? I told him, baseball, baseball, the Tigers and baseball, baseball, Ted Williams and baseball, baseball. I love the game, baseball, Yankees, Red Legs, Braves, White Sox, Indians, Phillies, Senators, Red Sox, Orioles, Athletics, Pirates, baseball, baseball, baseball.
So you've been listening to the Johnny and Josh Show. Don't forget to like us, subscribe, hit the button, and you know where to do it. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. Be a part of the family on the Johnny and Josh Show.